This is Rainmaker FM, the digital marketing podcast network. It's built on the Rainmaker platform, which empowers you to build your own digital marketing and sales platform. Start your free 14-day trial at rainmakerplatform.com. Welcome to The Showrunner, where we have one goal: teach you how to develop, launch, and run a remarkable show. Ready? And welcome back to The Showrunner. This is episode number 37. I'm your host, Jared Morris, VP of Marketing for Rainmaker Digital. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Johnny Naster, host of Hack the Entrepreneur, also now the face of Hack the Entrepreneur, as well as defender of humanity and budding author. Mr. Naster, welcome. How are you and how's the book going?
The book is awesome. I'm gonna say done. Ignore everything I said before we started recording.
Because this is coming out on the 9th, so you're projecting forward. I like it.
Right, exactly. So it is done at this point. It's already into Amazon and ready for to be pressed for people's stockings this holiday
season.
That's
very exciting.
But you got married. You got married like less than a week ago.
The last time we talked, I was a single man, and I am a single man no longer. Happily married now, and it was wonderful. Yeah,
congratulations.
We did it the day before Thanksgiving. Our whole family was in town, so we kind of put a wedding together pretty quickly, and it ended up being wonderful. So, yeah,
that's awesome. What's the date of that?
November 25th.
I was going to say as an ignorant Canadian, but no, just as a Canadian, yes, in general. And we discussed this whole Thanksgiving thing. It's different in different parts of the world. Does Thanksgiving always fall on the same day?
It always falls on the fourth Thursday in November.
Okay. So yes, it is like that. Okay. That's how ours is. Ours is like on a Monday, and it's like in October, yeah, the second or third one. No, that, the
which
first
brings
one.
Up yeah. an interesting dilemma. Do we celebrate our anniversary on the 25th every year, or do we do it the day before Thanksgiving every year? Because there's significance both ways. We're gonna have to figure this out. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, see, we actually I when I got off the call with you the time you announced your wedding to me, I then told my wife, and she was like, oh wow, we got married the day before Thanksgiving.
Did you really?
It's in October. And
whoa.
Yeah, and I was like, wow, yeah, of course we did. But it's a completely different month. It just kind of knocked me.
Yeah, but
right?
Still, there's something there. The showrunner connection. So, we both independently got married the day before
it's
Thanksgiving.
Weird, right? Considering it's like not the same date. It's just totally different date, but the same.
That's
thing.
Crazy.
It's weird.
So wait,
I thought I'd share that with you. I don't want to steal your thunder.
No, but this is interesting. So when do you guys celebrate your anniversary? Is it the same like calendar day, or do you always do it the day before Thanksgiving, Canadian Thanksgiving?
No, October 6th. So it's actually, sometimes it's been almost 2 weeks off, like a week and a bit off at times, because it varies so much that it's like not even Thanksgiving anymore. And then other times it's like totally, this is Thanksgiving.
So. Interesting. All right. Yeah, we're going to have to make that decision.
But we also celebrate like late. Like we went to Austin in November, right? To celebrate our anniversary in October.
It's a good place to celebrate an anniversary.
It's all when it fits in though, right? So it's not really a particular day.
Yes, yes. But yeah, I'm feeling good. It was an awesome ceremony and excited for my first Christmas as a married man coming up here in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. So, hey, by the way, the wedding actually presented some complications with one of my shows, which I thought would make for an interesting episode because of how we overcame those challenges. And so I thought it would make for a good main topic. Do you want to dive into that with me today?
I would love to dive into that with you
today. Let's dive in right now. So here's what I want to talk about today, Johnny, which is, when is it a good time to start building a production and/or co-host team? And the reason why I've been thinking about this is because, as you know, as I know, as we've discussed on The Showrunner, complications come up from time to time, right? Time crunches, or, you know, we have life changes that make it really hard to keep a previous schedule that fit really well. And I've experienced that with two of my shows, Primility Primer and Assembly Call. One show, Primility Primer, that was all me, all the production, all the hosting, it was all me. And the Assembly Call, which is now in its fifth year, which I have three regular co-hosts, plus now two interns who help with production stuff. And what's interesting is that, as I've talked about before, I had to suspend the episodes of Primality Primer, the daily episodes that I was doing, simply because with the launch of Digital Commerce Institute, the wedding, Thanksgiving, like all this stuff coming up at once, something just had to give, right? And so I couldn't keep doing that. But the Assembly Call has powered on, even though it's a more challenging production schedule than Primality Primer. And the main reason why is because I have a team. Right. If I didn't have co-hosts I could lean on to be there when I wasn't able to be there, if I didn't have people who could handle the pre-production and post-production stuff on some of these episodes, there is absolutely no way that I would have been able to keep it going. And a great example of this was just this past week, because the Assembly Call, for those of you who don't know, it's a post-game show for Indiana basketball games, and Indiana happened to be playing in the Maui Invitational. For those of you who don't know what the Maui Invitational is, it's an annual tournament that takes place the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday before the American Thanksgiving. Now, that presented some challenges, obviously, because not only were we hosting Thanksgiving for our entire family, we were getting married on Wednesday. And our big thing, our differentiator, is we have a show after every single game. And usually I'm able to host that show, but as I looked at that schedule, literally the Wednesday game was going to fall right during the ceremony. And my now wife, Heather, she loves me. She's very understanding, and she loves this project. But I think even she would have been a little bit miffed if I had not been at the ceremony because I was hosting an episode of the Assembly Call.
You could have periscoped it or something. I mean, really just have it sort of off to the side.
Yeah, I think even that would have been much. And plus, you know, as you know, for an event like this, stuff comes up last minute, and there's always a lot of planning to do. And so I knew that realistically, I was going to have to basically be nowhere to be found on Tuesday and Wednesday. It just wasn't going to be feasible. And we really didn't want to break our consecutive streak of doing shows. You know, we want to be there because our audience counts on us. And fortunately, you know, one of my co-hosts was actually out in Maui covering it live, but that meant he couldn't do the post-game show. One of the interns was home with his family, unable to do it. But on Tuesday, one of my co-hosts was able to host it solo just by himself. One of the interns, actually. His first ever attempt at, he hadn't even been a co-host on a show yet, a freshman at Indiana, hosted the whole thing himself, you know, last minute, really stepped up big. And then on Wednesday, one of my regular co-hosts hosted and did a great job doing it himself. And the point here is, you know, and what I want to ask you and kick it over to you with Johnny is, when is it a good time to start building a production or co-host team? Because again, with Primality Primer, it was after 80 episodes, but I hadn't built any type of team. And when you remove me from the equation, the show ceases to exist. But with the Assembly Call, now because there's this team around it, remove me from the equation and things are a little bit more complicated, but the show rolls on and there's people to step up and there are other people who can step up and fill the role that I was filling, and it keeps that show motoring on. It keeps the content there for the audience, allows you to continue to fulfill that expectation. And I know with you, with Hack the Entrepreneur, obviously you're the host of every show, but you have a production team that you're able to help lean on. And there are different challenges with every show. But that's what I want to talk about today, is when is it a good time to start building a team so not everything is always so reliant on you?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the question that almost can't be answered by somebody else and by some other show, if that makes sense. Like, it's so unique to your situation, right? I know just from people in the course, people we talk to, my own experience, that when you try and, like, you have co-hosts, and so the initial thought usually is before starting is to get a co-host, right? To lean on them, to be able to have this extra support to take half the work, take half the expense, take half of the creation, everything. But the biggest problem that usually happens in there is that the two of you don't have the same sort of ambition for the show after a few months of working together. So then it ends up being like detrimental to the act, to the show itself rather than helping it. So it's so hard, right? Mm-hmm. Because of that. And so I don't know, like with Hack the Entrepreneur, it actually was going to be a co-hosted show initially. We came up with the title as a co-hosted show. And then just my experience dealing with partners, there was literally like a 4-day period. This is like how when I was ready to do it. And so when I'm ready to do something, I'm like ready to do it. And so I was ready to do it. And I literally like we had talked on Skype, me and my potential co-host. And then I had sent him like some questions and some things that needed to be done. 4 days later, he hadn't even responded to it. So I was just like emailed him like, dude, all right, cool. I'm running with it. Thanks. It was fun. And then he was just like, oh, and then he's like, no, that's cool. I realized that I didn't think there'd be anybody else at that point that was as motivated and as gung-ho for the project as I was. And it would have actually detracted from me to try and motivate somebody to my level of motivation and keep them there. So therefore I didn't do it. But I knew that that would bring on extra sort of a burden to myself of obviously work, production costs, everything on me, but I was willing to do it. But that's also why I started in like mid-July recording and I didn't launch till September 5th because I knew I needed to have those episodes recorded, right? I really did. I had 21 or 22 episodes recorded before I even launched the show so that life could happen because life does happen. Things come up, things need to be done and you can't maybe record right now or maybe I couldn't find guests again or anything, right? So I needed to make that up. And then it was about 7 or 8 weeks later when I finally got the sponsor and that's what I used that money for. I literally used that money to hire a production team, like a VA and an editor. And I told myself sort of at the beginning that I was doing it myself. I was going to take in all the burden myself, do the extra work. And I wasn't going to hire somebody to help me until I had revenue generated to pay for that. So that's how I did it. And those are the reasons why I did it. But as I said at the beginning, it's so hard and it's so unique to the person. But from everything I know myself and everybody I've talked to within the course, finding a co-host and just thinking that they're going to stay as motivated as you and they're going to take half of everything and push the show forward in the long term is usually you're wearing like rose colored glasses, yeah, as they say. And it's not going to work out in that way in the long term. So really, really, truly think about it. And to me, it's like if you can just hold off launching long enough and kind of get those shows backed up and in the can, then it helps you in the long term to be able to continue on at the right schedule.
One of the things I have written on here, you know, as an alternative to this, to a team, is what you did, right? Planning ahead, getting episodes in the can. So as you say, life can happen and you're ready to deal with it. When you're doing something like I was doing with a daily show where every single day it's a brand new episode, when life gets in the way, there's nothing really that you can do, which has me kind of rethinking, you know, what I want to do for Primality Primer because of that. But you brought up something interesting that I want to talk about. And, you know, this idea of a co-host, because I wonder if it's the wrong way to look at it, to look at a co-host as someone who's going to take on 50% of the work, right? We are the showrunners. So we're the ones running the show. And I'll use the assembly call as an example. You know, the guys who co-host the show with me, you know, they're there, they show up for the episodes, you know, they do their thing. But after that, you know, it's really been me that has done, the pre-production, the post-production, that writes the emails, that maintains the site, you know. And so that motivation that I have is what has driven the show for 5 years. Now, we wouldn't be where we are without those guys. Their contributions are invaluable, but it's not a 50-50 or even a 33-33-33 relationship. It's, you know, they have their role, I have mine. And I agree with you. I think trying to find someone that's a 50-50 partner, like that's what we've been with the showrunner. And I think we've been really lucky that our working relationship has been so good. But clearly we're on the same wavelength because we got married the day before Thanksgiving. So, I mean, there's obviously something exactly rare there that may not be able to be replicated. But do you think that maybe thinking about it in terms of 50-50 is too difficult, but showrunners should potentially open up their mind to filling roles, right? Someone who can come sit in a co-host chair and provide insight, provide some expertise. And because what that does, like for instance, when Andy hosted the show on Wednesday and he's been with me since day one, and he's now the guy that when I'm out, you know, he's had enough experience, you know, he knows how to use Hangouts, that in a pinch, he can host the show. But he, you know, it's not 50-50. He's not doing all the other stuff, but he can host the show, make sure the content gets created. And I wonder if as showrunners, we should challenge ourselves when we think about a team, not just think about it as a co-host, a 50-50 partner, but really think of ourselves as showrunners managing a team and try and find people who can fit specific roles, even if it's audience facing, even if it's, you know, content creation, or if it's something that's production, that's back end, that can help alleviate some of just the daily or weekly burden, depending on the schedule, and B, someone that over time can learn enough about the show's operation that when we have to step out, they can stand in for an episode or for a week or even for a month, depending on what it is, because something like that's going to take some time to develop. But if we are only fearful of the potential downside of a co-host like you communicated, I wonder if we prevent ourselves from building the kind of team that can really take our show to the next level.
Yeah, I think you're probably absolutely right. It's just, I think the reasons you need to think about is why you want the co-host. So I like how you define the fact that it's not 33, 33, 33 or 50, 50 or whatever. And maybe we need to rethink that because you're probably right. But I think lots of the times why we think we need a show co-host at the beginning is I think because we're afraid to do it ourselves. I know I was the first show I ever did. I did it with somebody. The technical hangups were just like, it was too much. And so I met somebody who could do it. And then it was like, well, this makes sense. This is a great way to get going. And that can be, right? So it's usually that there's something like there's something where you think that, I don't feel adequate enough in a certain way. Otherwise, I don't think there's a reason why you would possibly be going for a co-host. And so you need to think about that. But when you say that the whole 50-50 thing isn't right and everything, but the problem is that people are, when we go to start shows, we've read so many blog posts now, and we've seen so many headlines about the gold rush of podcasting, the mountains of money to be made, right? And so people, myself, we get sort of hung up on, well, what happens when the $10,000 a month starts rolling in 3 weeks after we launch? Then how do we split that up, right? So then it's like contracts now and all this like complicated things that are almost, if you step back from it yourself, it's almost like they're just obstacles you're sort of putting in your way from doing the hard work of launching your show. So we need to watch for those things, right? Because like, what will you do, Jared, with the show once, like, if it's not an equal split? I mean, you do the post, you do the pre-production with Assembly Call, but what happens when real revenue gets generated from that? As could really, really, I'm going to be shocked if in the next couple of years that doesn't happen. Or even sooner, because you're definitely setting it up to do that. So at that point, how's the money going to be divided up?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I've always been extremely generous with those guys with the revenue that has come in, you know, splitting it very fairly. And I think that we, you know, you bring up a good point that is something that can add complications. You know, I don't fear it with this group of guys. But I also wonder how representative this group is of the shows that our listeners are getting ready to start. And I think that's probably something that you want to define. We've talked about it, and we have, you know, certain percentages that will happen, and that's all fine, and it's all handshakes, dealing with each other like humans, as you say. But it can add extra complications. There's no question about it. I mean, that's a really good point.
Yeah, and so I think these are the reasons, I think, why Jared and I are discussing sort of the different perspectives of it is because it really is about you, about what you're trying to create and how you're going to go about creating it. But know that whether you take on a co-host or a production team, whatever, it's still, you are going to be either the sole showrunner or a co-hosted showrunner. But it's still, so much depends on you. There's still going to be a ton of work. And there's going to be life around you. There's going to be things that happen that you have to push through. You have to work around. This is when you want something bad enough that you're willing to not watch that TV show tonight, when you're willing to, when everybody goes to bed at 10 o'clock in your house and you can stay up till midnight once in a while and do the work. You really, like, to think that you will never have to do that sort of thing to succeed as a showrunner is completely false. It absolutely is. I mean, John Lee Dumas did like almost 1,000 episodes, literally recording them daily, 7 days a week, and doing all of the production himself, like literally like show notes and literally editing the episodes all by himself, uploading it to like, and he just did it. He wanted it so badly. And you have to, you really have to convince yourself that you are up to that challenge, because there's no way around it. Like, you're talking being a showrunner. So think of like David Letterman. If you go through all the years of David Letterman's work, David Letterman showed up every Monday to Friday. That's just what he did. It didn't matter if something had gone bad that day. It didn't matter if he was sick that day. He took medicine so that he could be better. It wasn't just like, it's Wednesday. I don't feel like I have it in me today. He showed up. He had to. He was literally the person running the show. And you have to think that way, because to be a showrunner, you have to kind of up your game in that way. And this is all just sort of a mental thing that you need to accept and you need to kind of embrace before even deciding to hit publish on that first episode. I think it's essential. And I think when you take yourself that seriously, your listeners and your audience that you start to build will take you that seriously. It's just the way it is. Like, you can literally go through and watch episodes of David Letterman. You can tell, if you're really looking, those people who run those shows, you can see days where it's just like, you know that they're kind of pushing through to really be there. There's other days where it's just like, this is amazing. But every day is not amazing. Every time you sit down to record an intro or record an outro, it's not going to be amazing. Every time you sit down to record an interview, it's not going to be amazing. It's not. You have to hopefully push through and make it sound like it's amazing, so it's awesome for and a great experience for your audience. But you, as the showrunner, internally, it might not be. And you have to push through that. You really, really, really do. Co-hosted team, production team, anything else around you is variables that can change. But you do have to internally accept that and sort of have that.
That's mindset. A great point. And I would also say, if you are looking to identify co-hosts or looking to identify team members, really understand what the person's motivation is. Because I think you want someone whose motivation is genuine for the topic and for the content, not just for what they could potentially get out of it. I think that's, you know, part of what has made this relationship work, Johnny, part of what has made our team work with the Assembly Call, is that everybody is heavily invested in the topic. There's a genuine love for doing it, that when there's no money there, people still show up to do it. Now, when that starts to come, that's a nice bonus. But I think when you can find people that maybe they don't share your overall motivation for the big picture, for, you know, for where the podcast can go long term, but if they share your enthusiasm for showing up to create the content, that is a person that I would keep my eye on, that I would maybe bring on as a, you know, try them as a trial run as a co-host, see if that relationship is there and can be built. Because when you really find those people that are as invested as you are in the content itself, again, maybe not in growing the podcast or the show, maybe not in building the infrastructure that goes around it, like we've talked about on previous episodes, but when you can identify people and bring them into your team that love the content as much as you do, those people can be invaluable and they can grow in to trusted team members like the ones that we're talking about. Because, again, you know, getting back to why we did this episode, why we wanted to talk about this topic in the first place, you know, it was incredible for me. I mean, I, you know, planning a wedding when we've got this Maui Invitational was, you know, the timing really wasn't great, because it's a tournament that, you know, teams only get to play in every 4 or 5 years. People are really excited about it. So I knew there would be a lot of attention on these episodes. but, you know, obviously the wedding comes first. And I was really disappointed that we were probably going to have to do the Monday show and then probably take Tuesday and Wednesday off. And the fact that, you know, the people on the team were so invested that they stepped up and would do it, you know, on their own, do a half hour show on their own, you know, when they're having their own, you know, in the middle of their own holiday travel and all of this, was incredible. And I think it was a great sign to our audience for what our commitment was to them. And that's, you know, the other thing that I want to say here is the importance of communication. Communication, A, to your audience, you know, especially when times get tough, you know, if you think you might have to miss an episode, let your audience know, let them know exactly what's going on so they know what to expect. And then communication with your team. You know, making sure that you're communicating ahead of time about the schedule, you know, understanding what everybody's capable of, what they're willing to do, and just having those lines of communication open. Because we thought that we weren't going to be able to do the Tuesday show literally until about an hour and a half before, when Michael, our intern, texted me and was like, hey, if you need someone to do the show, I can step up and do it. And again, just having someone like that was incredible to keep things going, to make sure that we were there for our audience. But it's something that has been very intentional on my part to develop. And again, whether you decide to do it or not, Johnny, like you said, that's so dependent on your situation, your show, so many different particulars that are going to be specific to each individual showrunner. But the reason I wanted to do this is think about it, because it was such a rewarding experience to be able to step back, take care of what I needed to in my personal life, and to still have the show going. And that doesn't happen by just, you know, deciding you're going to have a team after a week. That's an intentional decision and something that's been built over a few years. But when you have it and when it's right, it is so invaluable to you as a showrunner and to your audience that it's certainly worth thinking about whether you decide to do it or not. And we just wanted to share some of our views on the pros and cons and what it will take to do it successfully. And I do, let me mention one other thing too. You know, one other alternative here too is, you know, scaling production back when times get tough. Cause that's, you know, a big reason why we're talking about this is the importance of a team, you know, when you get into those time crunches, when life happens. And there's possibly a happy medium between what I did with Primality Primer and what we did with Assembly Call. You know, Assembly Call, it's full speed ahead, no change. Primality Primer, I totally stopped it. And it, perhaps it doesn't have to be like that. Perhaps, you know, you can scale back your production. Would it have been the worst thing in the world if we told the audience, hey, you know, we're taking, you know, Jared's getting married. We have XYZ other things going on. Ryan's actually going to be in Maui. So we're not going to have post-game shows, but we will have, you know, we will send our post-game emails and Ryan will have coverage on Twitter. Would that have been horrible? No. It definitely wouldn't have been, as long as we communicated it to our audience. You know, would it have been better for me to keep doing a Primality Primer on Friday as opposed to not doing them at all? Perhaps. And so, you know, I tend to work in extremes, but sometimes just scaling back your production can also work really well too. So I guess in this case, I'm saying those are the two examples of what I actually did, but do also know that there is kind of a happy medium in the middle that for you may actually end up being the better option.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you're an extreme case because you have multiple shows going. So it's not like you were just running Primality Primer and just like, I'm not podcasting anymore. It was like, no, I'm still actually doing several shows a week. I'm just not doing this one right now daily. So I think, yeah, it's really knowing your goals, knowing goals of your co-hosts or people you're taking on, if you are doing that deliberately, and then just sort of finding out what works for you and what you want from your show. And I think you might make mistakes. We all do. And you'll learn from them and either roll those lessons into the next show or sort of step back and kind of realign. But you can do these things. These shows are living, breathing sort of things, right? Projects. So you have to be willing to sort of fluidly move with them and adjust as needs to be adjusted.
Johnny, you have a very exciting podcast recommendation. Shall we get to that next?
Yeah, let's do it.
Mr. Nastor, your podcast recommendation.
My podcast recommendation, I loved this show when it came out. And then I got away, like I do with all shows, I guess. And then I got away from it for a bit. And then I go back to it. And so yesterday, actually, walked for about an hour from here. There's a coffee shop that I wanted to walk to. So I put my headphones on, walked down there to work. And so I got 2 hours of there and back walking. And The Mainframe by Tony Clark and Chris Garrett. It's a show also on Rainmaker FM, like we are. And it's just an excellent show for people that are trying to develop digital businesses. Two very, very smart guys. They're kind of nerds. They really are. The intros are like, it's so Star Wars based right now because Star Wars coming out. It's actually comical. And I'm not even a Star Wars fan per se, but I do love it. I do love their banter between it. And then they get into like some, they have this really cool ability to take sort of big, giant concepts and ideas and really sort of simplify them into really short, concise episodes. So it's The Mainframe with Tony Clark and Chris Garrett. You can find it on rainmaker.fm. I listened to, I think it was 5 episodes yesterday during that time, and I really, really, really enjoyed it. So that is my podcast recommendation for you today.
Excellent. Go listen to The Mainframe. It is wonderful. And that wraps up this episode of The Showrunner. Of course, we encourage you to go to showrunner.fm and join our email list. If you have not already, when you do that, you will start receiving our content series, The Essential Elements of a Remarkable Podcast, which will detail for you our core curriculum that we believe and that we talk about here at The Showrunner. And also, Johnny, a quick dual call to action here real quick for folks that are interested in your book. What can they do to get more information?
They can go to htebook.com. So that's Hack the Entrepreneur Book, or htebook.com. And there's a button there. You could help out with the, we're running a Thunderclap campaign, which I've never done before, which is kind of interesting. And I think by the time this goes live, it will be fully supported, but you can still go there and support. And what that does is allows us to send out a message to your Twitter or your Facebook all December 15th, I think at 11 a.m. It's going to go out. It's going out to like over 400,000 people socially right now. So that'd be really cool. But at htebook.com, you can also get on the email list and get notified when the book comes out. Plus, I'm going to be doing a couple cool bonuses for people on that list. So yeah, check that out. That'd be really awesome. And when this comes out, I think the book comes out a week later.
Just for book launches, or is that for launches of any kind?
No, for every, I've never even thought of using it for, now that you actually just mention it. People do it for TV shows, movies, books, any sort of campaign you want. It's literally like, it's free to set up and it's just a super simple button. You create what it's going to say on their tweet or their Facebook message. You add an image and you choose how many people you want to support it. I think there's like 100, then there's 250 and like 500. And it doesn't go out unless you get that much support. So it pushes you to really go out and get people to support it. And then, yeah, it literally just sends out that message to everybody's social media at the same time to actually create like a buzz around it. And it's really cool. It's fun to see the people supporting me. And but yeah, you could totally, now that we talk about it, use it for a podcast launch.
Maybe we talk about that on the next episode. Maybe you share some insight from, because I think a lot of people will be able to, we've talked about this, write books from their podcast episodes. Perhaps we take an episode and talk about what you've learned from your experience.
Yeah,
my other thought is that Thunderclap would be a great superhero name. Like if you could just clap and then everything around you within like a certain radius would just like crumble. It would make it very hard to go to sporting events, but it could be a very useful superpower in certain situations.
Yeah, totally. Well, I mean, I think that's what they're kind of going for, right? I mean, it creates this giant thunderclap of your message. Like instantly at 1 second, everybody goes out to it. It's pretty cool. Like we'll discuss it
next week.
We should do that.
Excellent. Well, thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next week on another brand new episode of The Showrunner.